Welcome to SportsBeat KC, the Kansas City Stars Daily Sports Podcast. It is Wednesday, April 14th, and I'm Blair Kirkhoff. We talk Chiefs today, starting with the Britt Reid story. On Monday, the former Chiefs linebackers coach and son of head coach Andy Reid was charged with a DUI in connection with the crash 2 months ago that severely injured a five-year-old girl. On today's show, the star writers who covered the story, reporter Glenn Rice and beat writer Sam McDowell, joined columnist Vahe Gregorian in the discussion. What's next in the process and what questions are left unanswered? After a break, beat writer Herbie Teope and I discuss the latest development in the NFL, that is, teams opting out of voluntary workouts that are slated to begin next Monday. On Tuesday, the Broncos, Seahawks, and Buccaneers announced their intention to opt out, and as Herbie and I were recording on Wednesday morning, those teams were joined by the Detroit Lions. There may be more taking this road over the next few days. Could the Chiefs be one of those teams? Herbie shares his thoughts. Also, more mock draft news because, after all, it's April. Okay, let's get started with our conversation of the Britt Reid case. All right, we're here with reporter extraordinaire Glenn Rice, with Chiefs beat writer Sam McDowell, and columnist Vahe Gregorian. And we're going to talk a little bit about the news that broke on Monday. And full transparency, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon for the Wednesday podcast. So, of course, this is about Britt Reid. And on Monday, he was charged while driving intoxicated. The incident happened 2 months ago, and the crash left a five-year-old girl, Ariel Young, with a traumatic brain injury. It's a Class D felony. And if convicted, Reid could spend 7 years in jail. And we learned that Britt Reid was driving more than 83 miles an hour 2 seconds before hitting the first of two vehicles, and he had a blood alcohol content of 0.113. The legal limit is 0.08. Britt Reid surrendered to police, and he was released on a $100,000 bond. So, Glenn, I get my first question is, what happens next? What's the next step in the process?
Reid has a court appearance on May 27th. He's being represented by J.R. Hobbs, which is, in the legal community, one of the top defense attorneys, criminal defense attorneys in Kansas City. And he's being monitored for alcohol consumption. He can't go into a bar or go into a place where alcohol is the primary item sold there. And he has to be randomly tested, things of that nature. He can't use drugs or anything illegal, anything of that nature. So it's waiting to see what other things may fall out from this regarding additional criminal charges he may face, but Missouri law has changed over the years. So the prosecutor, Gene Peters Baker, went after the most egregious injury, which is Ariel Young's traumatic brain injury.
That's something I didn't know, that she couldn't go after everybody who was injured. It's Missouri law that...
Yeah, Missouri law was changed in 2017, and it's like a culmination of various DWI assaults and so forth. I think it's still being litigated in the appellate division whether things could be adjusted as a result of that law. And so I'm working on another story about the law itself. So so we'll see how that turns out. So,
Sam, what did the Chiefs react? What was their statement on this?
Yeah, I guess it's probably best to get it word for word, but you know, they said that the Kansas City Chiefs organization remains steadfast and are concerned by all who have been impacted by this tragic accident. Our prayers are focused on Ariel's continued healing and recovery. The Chiefs are regularly in contact with the family's designated representative during this challenging time. And it really echoes what they've been saying since the Super Bowl, because obviously this was a major topic of conversation at the Super Bowl. It happened 3 days, 3 days before the Super Bowl. And, you know, that they've constantly put their thoughts with Ariel and her family And, you know, they're in a position where they're not commenting on what happened that night, what happened with Britt Reid. Of course, we've asked those questions. And, you know, with the obvious assumption of potentially making themselves liable if, by saying something they shouldn't.
Yeah, you're right. I should have made that clear off at the top that this occurred on the Thursday before the Super Bowl, Thursday night at like 9 p.m. or so, something like that.
Correct.
And the Chiefs stayed in Kansas City. They were still in Kansas City, obviously, because the team decided not to travel to the Super Bowl the week of the Super Bowl, as is, you know, as has always been done. But they decided to wait until Saturday, so they were in town Friday and then left for Tampa on Saturday afternoon. And of course, that decision to stay in Kansas City was, as it turned out, a pretty fateful one. But so, like, I guess the question I ask myself, and I suppose is pretty key to the whole thing, is, you know, where Britt Reid was drinking, and where did he, you know, when he blew the .113, where did that happen? I guess we have some reason to believe it wasn't at a bar or a restaurant, because he told police at the scene that he had just left work. But that strikes me as being a pretty significant question to have answered, doesn't it, Vahe? That you know, where Britt Reid consumed the alcohol is important here.
It is, and in a lot of ways, it is the very core of what we might be thinking about beyond the tragic injuries, right? What's the context? You know, what do we know about how it happened? And frankly, whether circumstances were in some way preventable. What is the setup that is out there at the complex? I mean, there's just a lot of questions about this, and we understand that there's some things that are delicate, some things that are private, some things that are a matter of potential litigious nature, all those things. But I do feel like through all this, we've not really gotten any kind of clear signal from the Chiefs about what happened that night. And I'd like to think there's a way they could be more forthcoming.
And one thing we don't know is we don't know about any kind of NFL policy about alcohol in a team facility, do we? Is that?
Well,
I've never had to think about it before.
Yeah,
now.
You know, I mean, when you look up the code of conduct, the most recent one I could find mentions not having substances in the team facilities, and so, you know, it's just kind of vague language in that sense to know the legality of actually having alcohol. And I do think this is an important point because, you know, I think people have probably wondered why we haven't reported certain things, and certainly when the wreck. The crash occurs so close to the facility, and it makes logical sense that it's on his way home, knowing where he lives, and he says he was coming from work, that I'm sure readers can connect those dots on their own, but we deal with knowing exact facts and reporting exactly what we do know, which is why we haven't reported that he was drinking at the team facility, and therefore, you know, whether or not how he was drinking at the team facility. But those are certainly questions that we're continuing to try to report and continuing to try to answer. And to Vahe's point, at some point the Chiefs owe us these answers as well.
Well, I think they owe the public the answers, right? I mean, there's a 5-year-old girl who, you know, whose life has been changed, altered because of this. And the public was put in harm's way by the action of a Chiefs assistant coach. And I think there's a reason to expect some answers from the Chiefs other than the sympathetic, you know, statements that we've been getting from them. And I don't, listen, the attorneys, I'm sure, are none of this is happening without a lot of conferences, right, among attorneys. And there has to be some strategy to what to say, when to say it, how to say it, that sort of thing. But we are approaching the NFL draft, and that is a spotlight time for all NFL teams. And you know, Andy Reid and Brett Veach, Mark Donovan, you know, there will be members, and even Clark Hunt has been, you know, it speaks publicly during the NFL draft, or has in the past. So there will be opportunities for them to say something about this. And do we think that's going to happen, though?
It's a great question. I mean, I'm certainly curious to see how they're going to approach this. You know, Andy Reid's the first one out of the gate of those ones you just mentioned. He talks on Monday. Like you said, Blair, I mean, they've certainly discussed and prepared. Like, they know questions are going to be coming about Britt Reid. It would be regardless, but the fact that it's his son certainly adds a whole nother layer to this context. But I really don't know. I don't know what Andy Reid is going to say on Monday, and I'm curious myself.
And just to add to this, I mean, it's kind of the elephant in the room in a certain way, right? But there is somewhere here a very personal story about Andy Reid and his son. Now, to what degree Andy Reid wants to open up about that, to what degree it's appropriate, I think is something that we're sensitive to. But it is a notable part of this story, especially because of the difficulties of the past and all those things. Andy, at times, has opened up about some of the strife, that, you know, the tragedy in his family. And I don't know whether he'll be inclined to do that at this point. But I hope he would be considering that.
Okay, guys, thanks for the conversation. Bobby Gregorian, Glenn Rice, and Sam McDowell. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, more Chiefs conversation.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Herbie Tiopi has joined us. We're recording this at 9 a.m. on Wednesday. So by the time this gets posted, there may be more NFL teams opting out of voluntary workouts. But for the moment, we know that the Broncos, the Seahawks, and the world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers made it known on Tuesday that they were not going to participate in voluntary workouts. Just take us through this process, Herbie. What, first of all, let's define what a voluntary workout is. What's the timeline for that? And then we'll get into what the decisions that that these teams made.
Yeah, in a normal year, and you're right, voluntary. That's the key word. It's voluntary. And I'm always reminded back in 2017 when Andy Reid blew up at OTAs when he was getting, as he said, he was getting pummeled by questions on why a certain player wasn't there. And of course, I wasn't here at the time, but that thing went viral. And, you know, we were watching it from afar. And he's absolutely correct. It's a voluntary workout. But here's the deal with this one. The NFLPA has been trying to work out with the NFL to make this part of the offseason virtual. Kind of like they wanted a mirror, kind of like what they did last year during the pandemic, even though the pandemic is still ongoing. But they wanted to mirror that. Virtual workouts. There's some pushback from the owners, there's some pushback from the teams. They want the players in. But again, it goes back to voluntary. I find it fascinating that the one team that stands out to me of the three you mentioned there so far, the Buccaneers, Super Bowl champions, and obviously you've got Tom Brady there, who's, you know, one of the faces of the NFL. So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the teams, if they fall in line, because it's the union. The union wants to put on a solid front togetherness. So we're probably going to see some movement here in the next few days, next few hours, because Monday is phase one of the off-season workout program, which is medicals, lifting, etc. And then it's going to move into phase two, which is classroom and on-field workouts, and then obviously the OTAs, organized team activities. All of that, the three phases, remain voluntary before the mandatory mini camp in mid-June.
Okay, and I was remiss. We should say this is happening because of COVID-19 concerns. So what are the prospects of the Chiefs joining this group?
Oh, you're asking me to speculate.
Yeah,
it's I don't, you know, that remains to be seen. I do know that Patrick Mahomes is the NFLPA voice for the locker room. Last year it was Dustin Colquitt before he was released. So once Colquitt was gone and Mahomes took over, this is going to be fascinating. You know, he and Andy Reid have a really good relationship. We know Andy Reid would prefer to have players in the building. So this is going to be one of those situations where Mahomes is going to do, and I'm purely speculating here, Mahomes is going to do what's best for the team, or he may decide to, you know, with the union. That's the key thing. What's the union going to say? So I don't know. He's got a fine balancing act right now to try to figure out.
So this was the case last year, right? There were no workouts. The players didn't come into the building until fall camp, right?
Correct. Yeah, so, but last year was a little different because that was mandated league-wide because correct. They had to go with local governments, city governments, you know, their protocols in place. And you got to remember last year, the coaches weren't even allowed in the building. So, but this year they started loosening them up. And I find it fascinating as well that the NFL informed teams yesterday that certain employees or all the team employees have to be vaccinated. Whereas for the players, that's not mandatory yet. So there's a lot of things in play right now that the NFLPA and the NFL have to work out before anyone's allowed, or excuse me, players are allowed in the building.
I saw some sentiment from some players yesterday that they point to last season and the quality of play of the 2020 regular season, suggesting there was no drop off in quality of play, and that was after a spring and summer of players not being in facilities. Now, who are we to judge? But if a player suggests that or say that don't they have a case that we've been hearing for years that some players don't want to participate in this, and some players don't. Like as you said, in 2017, you know, there was the Andy Reid was being asked every day about certain players that weren't there, and other players have opted. And listen, they have just not participated in off-season workouts. So I guess my question is, are the Chiefs, with any of the teams that don't participate, the Bucks, the Seahawks, the Broncos, but are they putting themselves at a competitive disadvantage by not doing this?
I think when you look at the younger players, especially, that's where you're going to run into your issues. Do we think linebacker Willie Gay would have benefited from OTAs? Absolutely. You know, when you got players going into a hard scheme and it takes a while to pick up, they're behind the power curve. You remember last year for training camp, it wasn't even a full training camp. It was an abbreviated training camp. You know, they chopped that thing down. Normally it's a 21-day event. They chopped it down to what, 12 days? And then it was the start of the regular season. So it's either the young players, the rookies especially, are the ones who are going to be at a disadvantage. Teams who have an influx of new personnel are going to have a disadvantage because they're not stepping in and knowing the scheme. You know, for the Chiefs, one thing that would concern me the most is the offensive line. We know they're going through transition. If you don't have all these OTAs picking everything up and knowing the personnel packages and knowing the plays, and you're not actually putting it in action until training camp, hey, you're going to throw your hands up in the air. Well, why didn't you guys do OTAs? Here's the thing, though. Last year, when players were not allowed to be in training facilities during the OTA portion, they did go out and work out on their own. You know, you had small groups maintaining COVID protocols, so you might see that again. You know, Tom Brady last year when he signed with the Bucks, he certainly did that last year. He brought all his receivers out, and they worked out at a high school.
Yeah, no. And I liked your example of Willie Gay. He's the perfect example of somebody who really would have benefited by being, you know, at the facility last year. And I also like the idea of the offensive line, especially if, you know, we're just all assuming there'll be a new left tackle. And if it comes out of the draft and, you know, he's going to need all the reps that he can get at
in the center. You know, yep. We always take for granted the center quarterback exchange. That's not something, you know, Austin Blythe is used to snapping to different quarterbacks. Mahomes might like it a certain spot, and they got to know all that.
Hey, don't some players have workout clauses in their contracts too? I mean, could they be losing out on bonuses because of
yes. that? Yes. And I think that's what the NFLPA has to work out with the NFL, you know. Most of your veteran players, they're set, you know. But I think, like, for the young players, the first year, the second year players in their rookie contracts who want that extra money, this is who it really affects.
Okay. All right. So you're sitting at your desk. Your laptop is right in front of you. I imagine that as soon as we finish talking, you'll be working feverishly on the next mock draft, because that's what April is all about, the mock drafts. And in your latest one, which was your second one, you also, with the Chiefs 31 overall, you had him taking an offensive tackle again. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Leon Eichenberg of Notre Dame, a solid left tackle for Notre Dame. This was a week after you had him with the Alabama, a week after identifying the Alabama left tackle as your guy. So my question is there any we've talked about it every time we've had a discussion on the Chiefs podcast, but any chance the Chiefs don't go left tackle with their first pick?
Yeah, that's always a possibility. You know, here's the key thing. In the normal year, I keep saying normal year because, you know, we're not actually quite the normal. Look at us. We're still doing Zooms. In a normal year, teams like to have anywhere between 180 to 220 players on their draft board. Okay, that's taken into consideration combine workouts, pro day workouts, private workouts. Two of the three private workouts in the combine did not happen this year. I remember I asked Brett Veach last year, how is this affecting your draft board? And he said he's probably going to see a decrease of players that they actually have on their board. Okay, so if that happens, anything's possible in the draft. You know, are they going to address need, or are they going to, or will they go with the best player available? You know, when we do these mock drafts across the NFL, when beat writers and all these draft analysts and prognosticators, we're looking at the entire pool, you know,
right,
without taking into account that Brett Veach and other team general managers only have 150 players on their draft board. So players I'm looking at, you know, Brett Veach is probably reading my mock draft like, this guy has no idea what he's doing there. You know, but that's there's some truth to that. So can they go outside of left tackle? Yeah, that possibility is there. And what I'm doing with my third mock draft, which is going to be published Friday, I do shake it up. I'm going to shake it up there just to see what happens and see, can they still address the players that we think they need? You know, and that's the key thing. What we think they need and what the team thinks they need are normally miles apart.
Okay, very good. All right, Herbie, we'll leave it there, and we will catch up again next week. Look, it's going to start, next week is the week before the draft, so there'll be a lot to talk about. Herbie, thanks a lot. That'll do it for today. Thanks to our SportsBeat KC production staff of Derek Donovan, Beth Welsh, Monty Davis, Jeff Rosen, Chris Fickett, and Savannah Smith. A lot of cap tips today. Glenn Rice, Vahe Gregorian, Sam McDowell, and Herbie T.O.B. Thanks, guys. Hey, links to their stories can be found in the show notes and on kansascity.com. We got another deal for you. You can subscribe to Sports Pass for 99 cents a month. That's right, 99 pennies a month. Sports Pass is the online version of the Star Sports section. You get all the stories that appear in the print editions of The Star, certainly sooner than they appear in the print editions, plus many more stories that appear only on the website. After 3 months, it auto-renews at $5.99 a month unless you cancel. And it's always a great time to subscribe. The Royals are off to a hot start. How about last night's victory over the Angels? Our local colleges are always making news, and of course, it is never not Chiefs season. How do you get it? You go to kansascity.com/sportspass2020. That's kansascity.com/sportspass2020. You want more than just sports coverage? Check out the entire Kansas City Star product. Sports, news, features, commentary, and analysis, the whole thing. You get all the stories written by my talented colleagues, plus additional national news, sports, and business coverage with the E-Edition. Love that E-Edition. The details for all of these deals can be found at account.kansascity.com/subscribe. And if you're having trouble hunting down any of these offers, you send me an email, bkirchhoff@kcstar.com, and I'll get you to the right place. So Whether it's the Sports Pass or the full subscription, you're getting and supporting the best sports and news coverage in Kansas City and helping us produce programs like SportsBeat KC. Thanks for listening, and we will be back on Thursday with another episode.